This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil, now streaming, only on Hulu.
This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hello and welcome to Is This Good? The show where we boldly, conclusively, and scientifically decide what things in this big wide world are good. I'm Matt Austin, and with me as always is production powerhouse Jason Doyle.
Hello.
Hi, JD. Thanks for coming. And today's guest is a columnist for SFGate, a co-founder of Defector, and the author of many books, including The Night the Lights Went Out, a memoir of life after brain damage. You know him from his podcasting on The Distraction, his mailbags on Deadspin, but I always think of him as the person who alerted me via a GQ profile that Justin Bieber had a line in a song that went, true story, swag, swag, swag on you, chillin' by the fire while we eat and fondue. A very treasured memory for me. It's the internet's most beloved hater, Drew McGarry. Drew, welcome to Is This Good?
I forgot about that Bieber lyric. I'm so pleased to remember some lyrics with you. And you know what's funny is I did that. So this was 2012 when I was sent to Profile Bieber. It was my first big boy assignment for GQ. They were like, look, if you can do this assignment, then we'll know that you're the real deal. And I got my job as a correspondent for them after that. But like, you know, we were of the mind, and I don't usually do this, but it was like, you know, we didn't really take Bieber all that seriously because he was still going through the awkward phase of going from child stardom to regular stardom. And I wasn't seeing it with that album. That album was called Believe, right? The next album, he became a absolute full-fledged pop superstar and has remained that way. He's a really talented, good artist, and so I should have been like, call it 5% more respectful.
Well, that's why we had you on, to apologize directly to Justin Bieber.
His people were so pissed about it. Like,
oh,
his
really?
rep was Scooter Braun, who is now infamous as the guy who bought Taylor Swift's music out from under her, and was the catalyst for her recording all the Taylor's Version albums because she didn't want Scooter to have any of the fucking money. And I was told way after the fact that, because Scooter was super pissed about that profile and threatened to have me prosecuted. I swear that's true.
Under the full extent of the law?
Well, no, because I had my recorder on me. I showed it to Justin. I said, hey, I'm recording. And I caught him talking shit about some custom shop, you know, while he was in his new custom van or whatever. And they're like, oh, you didn't get Justin's permission to record that. And California is a two-party state. Both parties have to consent. So like, Scooter Braun was like, we're going to call the cops on Drew. And my editors were like, go fuck yourself.
What do you mean by he's talking shit about a custom shop? Like a car shop, you mean?
Yeah. So like he got...
Like exhibits he got my ride?
Yeah, he had a tricked out Sprinter van from one custom shop.
Okay.
And he was like, oh my God, this is so tight. And like, he's with the guy who did it. And it, like, I'm not talking about like Pimp My Ride, because like, there's not like a fish tank in it. Like, it's just like, it's cool. Like,
oh, it's so got it sucks.
PlayStations in it. It's got leather upholstery. It's got like the same lane you get like on a fucking Virgin America flight, like all right. that shit, right? It's like, cool. And he was like, ah, fuck. I don't think it was West Coast Customs because that's the Pimp My Ride one. But he was like, ah, fuck, blank custom shop. And I put that in and they were super mad. And then apparently like a few years later, I was told, and I have no idea if this is true, and it probably isn't, that Justin actually liked that I got him like that, and that his people were mad because it made him look like his own man or something like that because he was 18. I have no fucking idea.
Oh, okay. Charting his own course. He didn't want to be perceived as Scooter controlling everything. And by the way, Scooter has since quit. He's since dropped all his clients, I believe. So you
his
have
clients
the last
fired
time.
Him.
Right,
his,
right,
his,
right.
His clients did not care for him, but he's still rich. And if you say my name is around him, he'll probably still punch a dog. He would not be happy.
I think he's like, isn't he the head of some like Korean, like K-pop conglomerate or something? Isn't that what he does now?
I mean, with
sure.
probably.
Yeah, probably.
Like I have no idea, but that sounds correct.
Yeah. I mean, while we're talking about it, I know this was a long time ago, but you were writing, you know, fairly high profile, you know, profile pieces for GQ. So like when they
Correct.
Tell you you're going to go do a Bieber profile, or I remember you had a big one with the Duck Dynasty guy, I forget his name, other than Duck Dynasty
Phil
guy.
Robertson, yes.
Right. So do you spend any time, obviously aside from thinking, what am I going to ask this person? Do you spend any time thinking about what kind of person should I be that will endear me to the person I'm profiling? Like, do you spend time thinking, will Justin Bieber like me? And what can I do to make Justin Bieber like me so that he will open up to me? Or you just go in as yourself?
I think I did that on the Bieber assignment to a faulty degree. Like, I tried to endear myself to him by telling some dirty story, and he didn't even react at all. And I was like, oh, shit. And then I never did that again. What you have to do, I mean, really, the legwork as a journalist is doing as much research on the subject as you can. Like, you know, with Duck Dynasty, I read all of their autobiographies, like all of them in full and, wow. you know, and watched the show and, you know, and talked to people who knew them or had worked with them. So, you know, to get background so that, you know, when I think what subjects like when you talk to them is if they know that you know what the fuck you're talking about, particularly with regards to their work, then they're more than happy to talk to you. And I actually, I am myself almost all the time now with subjects. And I do a thing where, you know, one of the, you know, one of the biggest, you know, hacks for journalists is that in an interview, you don't talk all that much, right? You leave empty space and the subject usually feels pressure to fill it. And that's when they start saying shit that they might not planned on saying. Right. I do the opposite. I talk way too fucking much. and what I usually do is my operating philosophy is that the more I give of myself to the subject, the more they'll give back. So, you know, when I talked with Chris Pratt, like Chris Pratt's son, the one he had with Anna Faris, I think he's had more since then, had problems at birth, as did mine. So, you know, I told him about that and we, you know, and that's how you forge connections with people, you know, just in general, right? That's how you decide you have something in common. And that was true with him and, you know, and with other people I've profiled. It's just, if you know who I am as a person, and I'm not just some guy who's sitting there with a notebook and a prepared list of questions, you know, and reciting them to you like they're off a fucking PowerPoint deck. Like, you're not going to get anything out of anybody that way. You need to have a real conversation. So I try my best to not have physical, you know, cue cards out when I'm talking to these people and we talk to them, be as normal, have as normal a human conversation as I possibly can. It's not easy with someone like Bieber, who is 18 and a terrible conversationalist. I'm sure he's better at it now. But it is easy with people who, you know, actors and musicians and people who are really quite used to publicly emoting, you know, that's not that big of a problem.
So like, who's in charge of the classic profile thing where they're like, we took you know, the Strokes bowling or whatever, you know what I mean, instead of just sitting down in a restaurant? Like, did you ever have to do one of those where you go do a kooky activity like paintball with Justin Bieber or something?
Yeah, I mean, the idea with Bieber was I was gonna box him, and then when I got to the studio he's like, no, I don't want to do that. And I was like, oh, okay.
Okay.
Like, so yeah, there are So when I was at GQ, and GQ is not like this anymore, but they would be like, hey, Drew, you know, here's this person, you know, we want, they're going to be on the cover. You want, you know, can you profile them? You know, what do you think would, you know, what do you want to do with them? And I'd have ideas. They might have ideas. The subject might have ideas, right? Like, because like they have agents, they have managers, they have handlers. They're like, oh, would be really great if Drew did X with, like, that was one of the reasons I actually didn't profile Rich Eisen. I was going to go to Pittsburgh and profile him doing, you know, doing the NFL Network telecast of a Steelers game or something like that. But they were like, oh, well, why don't you go to New York and sit in on his radio show and you'll see, you know, that he's more than just a sportscaster. And I was like, well, I don't give a fuck about that. I only care about the sportscasting part. So it was like, it's a conversation. It doesn't all happen in a single room with all the parties involved. It's, you know, it's a little bit of a game of telephone. You get a better handle on people when you see them in their natural element. You know, I was able to do that with, you know, the Duck Dynasty guys and with, you know, with Jay Glazer and, you know, and actually with Chris Pratt, we went and shot Guns because he wanted to do that. Because I think he was sort of a closet Republican at the time.
Right, he's not, right.
I don't think he's all that closeted anymore. And I have fired guns and I like firing guns, even though I'm an anti-gun person, right? Mm-hmm. So that was like a fun thing to do. And so that was like a cool thing that like the impetus came from him and it was part of like who he was. So that was a stunt that made sense. That wasn't just, you know, us taking a surfing lesson because we couldn't think of anything else to do for the copy. It was, you know, seeing someone sort of in an element and maybe not quite the expected element that you would think of them in. And of course, now you can very much see Chris Pratt doing that.
Right. And well, you know, he's an action hero, so I'm sure he's very practiced at shooting guns. Drew, before we start,
clean them and also locked them.
Drew, I don't know if this will be good for the article, but I'm going to put a blindfold on and disassemble this Glock in 7 seconds and then put it back together. But if you don't want to put that in your article, that's cool too. This is just some fun things that I do. If you want to support the show, go to patreon.com/isthisgood. And of course, send topics for future shows to isthisgoodpod@gmail.com and subscribe on YouTube. Drew, the premise of the show, it's very simple. I'm going to give you a topic and you just tell me if you think it's good. Here we go. Oliver M. asks, high school reunions, are they good? I was thinking about this because I was just told that it's my 25th reunion coming up in September.
Oh, really?
And I have been, I went to the 10th, and I went to the 20th. And after the 10th, I was like, high school reunions are really good. This is fun. After the 20th, I kind of thought, probably not going to do this again anytime soon. Yep. But what's, first of all, I guess, have you been to a high school reunion?
Yeah. So, all right. So for full context, so people know, my high school was a prep school. So already it's like, you know, a lot of people in the audience are going to roll their eyes. Like, but anyway,
Drew, I went to an all boys, school.
Look at you. Yeah. So, was it, did like terrorists invade it like in toy soldiers? And, like,
okay.
He wishes.
I had to pretend I had just got out of the shower when really I was crawling through a sewer. It was crazy.
Every time I was stuck in assembly at Exeter, I fantasized about terrorists taking over the assembly hall and I would have to rescue her and then I would get laid. Anyway, so I think that you're on the same trajectory as I am. I would have told you, I went to my fifth high school reunion and that fucking rocked. Right? Mm-hmm. Because it was right after I got out of college. Everyone's still young. Like, they look better than they did in high school.
Right. Mm-hmm.
They're all still single. They all still drink to excess, including me. So it's like, it's a fucking party. And one of my best friends now was a guy who I knew passingly when I was at school. And then we partied hard at the 5-year reunion. And then we were like, inseparable after that. So that was like really cool. Every reunion I went to subsequent after that was a waste of time. And the most significant waste of time was my 25th, because I had just gotten injured and it was my first trip after I was getting hurt. I was flying for the first time. I'd had a brain injury and, you know, it took a long time to recover. But anyway, I don't want to get into that because it's too long of a story. And I go to the the reunion, and like the people that I kind of wanted to see didn't attend at all. And everyone else, like, you know, like you're kind of like, oh, will she still be hot, or, you know, will he still be cool? And no, they're all parents, right? They're all parents and they're all like, you know, they're all like 40-year-old, like white collar workers. And they're all like, they're all giving each other elevator pitches. Like, it's a fucking networking event.
Right.
So I'm like, well, this blows. And like, my best friends from prep school actually aren't in my class. They were like one class behind. And we go on like a guy's like skiing vacation every winter. And, you know, I said to them, I think it was a year ago or 2 years ago, I was like, this is the only reunion I need. I never need to go back to fucking Exeter. And I never will. I'll never go back. I mean, unless I have a family member who goes there or something like that, I'll never go to another high school or college reunion. Not a chance.
Well, because I was going to say that at a certain point, you know who your friends are from high school, and you tend to either see them or see them online, you know, or call them or whatever. So the idea of going back to seeing the other 90% of kids, it's like, what's there? Is like, this person going to suddenly be cool and I'm going to like them? But then you just said that you became best friends with someone at a high school reunion. So you're
yeah,
kind of...
but like, that was like when I was in friend making mode, you know, like I'm 47 now. Like, right. I don't want more friends. I want right. less friends. I don't want obligations to people. Right.
Okay. So me and you, not going to happen. That's fine. And that's fine.
No, but you know, so it's like, it's just different, and that's all right.
Because obviously, I mean, I didn't know you went to Exeter. JD and I are both Canadian, so we're not super familiar with American schools, but I know that's one of the good ones. So I want,
actually, you know what? I can tell you what I was thinking of is that the other thing is that there's no novelty in seeing these people because Facebook exists, right? And so the initial Facebook, you know, back before Facebook became fucking Uncle Nazi Central, right? Like, it was like, you could look up the people that you hadn't seen in 20 years and you could see pictures of them. You'd be like, oh, they still got it or mm-hmm. whatever. And that was all you needed, right? That's all you needed. You just need to lay eyes on them. You need to actually like talk with them over like a fucking glass of Pinot in a plastic cup. Like, you don't need to do any of that shit. All you need to do is just lay eyes on them. And Facebook allowed you to do that. And Facebook, of course, was conceived by an Exeter graduate named Mark Zuckerberg, and he named it after the student directory of Exeter, which was nicknamed Facebook by all of us. So we would have the Facebook in our dorm. We'd rate all the girls like 1 to 10, like, oh, she hot, fuck her. And that's the genesis of Facebook. And so basically, you know, Mark Zuckerberg conceived a social network where people graded each other, you know, first out of horniness, but now out of pure absolute Nazi ideology. So that was a fun little evolution.
But you bring up a good point, because Exeter is a fancy school, produces, you know, some of America's best and greatest minds.
Yes.
Did you feel, because to me, it seems like you made it. I mean, you're a fucking published author like 5 or 6 times over.
I did. I'm a success.
You're a success. But did you feel, or did you think any of your friends felt pressure to come back at the 25th reunion and either A, embellish what they'd been up to, or B, not go at all because they're like, I don't feel like I've done enough to go back?
No, I don't. No, there wasn't any of that. It was just whether, okay, logistically, can I do this? Because, you know, can I travel? You know, can I get a hotel room? Like, all the basic sort of just practical shit. There wasn't any, oh, you know, oh, the cheerleader who wouldn't talk to me might be there, and that would be really embarrassing. Like, I think there was one girl I saw at the 25th who I had a crush on, and I was not, if I had a crush on you in high school, that was not good for you. That was not a good time for you.
Were you a dedicated mixtape maker?
Yeah, something like that. And I don't think she talked to me, but like, you know, I was like, okay, you know, that's fine. Like, I've been married for 20 years. It's not going to be like, wow, I can't wait to go to a reunion so I can cheat on my wife with someone who didn't fuck me before. Like, you know, I didn't have any of those hangups in I don't think my classmates did. It was always strictly a matter of logistics and practicality. You know, the social awkwardness, you'll get that feeling, you know, everyone at a reunion gets that. You mm-hmm. get that old high school feeling. But, you know, it goes from being you know, sort of romantic and cinematic to just sort of being like, you know, a funny trick of the mind for a few minutes, you know, before you're just at a party with a bunch of middle-aged people you don't really know and you're not going to talk to again until the next goddamn reunion. So, you know, I would say high school reunions are, they're good, you know, when you're still in the partying age, mm-hmm. you know, when you're still in your 20s. After that, a complete waste of time.
Yeah, I mean, I'm missing out on the tension I was promised having gone to an all-boys school of seeing a girl that I had a crush on and wondering, you know.
Right. Or like strutting in because you're like, look who's lost weight, you know, look who looks way better. Like, you know, you kind of want.
Oh, yeah. Because I never once have been to a high school, to one of my high school reunions and like, whispered to one of my friends, like, who the fuck is that? Fucking Gerald looks amazing. I didn't even recognize him. Like, you're like, everyone looks the same. And I always find it's the people that don't go to the reunion that should go. In the sense of, like, the people that were, like, probably thinking, well, I didn't like that school and I didn't love those people. So they kind of, you know, once you graduate, they disappear off the map. Those are the people that right. I want to see. Everyone else, I know what you've been doing. Congratulations.
Right. I'm the worst person for that because I write constantly about myself. So, like, you know, even my best friends will be like, you know, I'd ask you how you're doing, Drew, but, you know, I read the column this week, so
yeah,
I don't
yeah,
know what's going on.
Right, so, exactly.
So it's like it all, you know, thanks to the internet, there are certain interactions that, you know, tend to feel redundant. You know, it's like this high school reunion could have been an email. Right,
right, a group text. The other thing I think some people seem to be missing in the high school reunion is I'll hear about someone else's from a different school, and they're like, oh, we rented this Legion Hall or the back of this restaurant. To me, the whole, or I would say like 60% of the fun of it is going back to my actual old school where I yeah. went from the first grade until I graduated, and seeing like the tiny urinals and stuff.
Yeah,
like, that's
1,000%. Like going into, you know, smell, like you get the smell of the hall that you hadn't smelled and you saw. And like what's different? They, you know, there's a new science building or whatever.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, you get to go. And, well, we didn't have computers in my day.
Yeah, and I think also, you know, we're looking at this from, you know, I went to a very privileged school. You went to a boys' school, so I assume it was, you know, pretty nice, right? Like, or maybe it was a reform school.
It was a stone building, if that says
yeah,
anything.
Yeah,
to you.
All right. But, you know, I think if you went to like a public school, like my kids do, you know, there might be value in, first of all, your class has 600-700 people in it. So like there are like people you straight up never got a chance to interact with when you were in high school that you might meet and, but then also you get to see the physical premises and it will more likely than not be pretty close to the way you remembered it. And that's, you know, I think that has its own value.
Well, we poll the audience before we start and they tell us what they think. Before I give you the actual percentage of whether people said high school reunions.
Oh, are they listening right now? Or
they're all
live?
Listening, yeah. And
oh,
they,
wow.
Quiet down, everyone.
Oh, I asked you to edit.
No, I'm just kidding. It's not live. It's not at all live.
Oh, okay. All right.
Don't worry. We do it before the show.
All right.
I just
tell me anything, I'd believe it.
I just had a suggestion, which is, you know, like teachers probably hate most of us as students and they're annoyed. And when they go to the lounge, they're making fun of us. But they can't make fun of us while we're in high school because then, you know, we would tell our parents and then our parents would
get
upset.
Yeah, you'd get fired.
They should roast the students at reunions. Like 10 years later, 20 years later, who fuck? Like, I was thinking about this because...
Yeah, but the teachers are dead.
I don't know. At my school, they're very resilient. I don't know. I don't know what they're doing over there. They're like cryogenically freezing. They're all still speaking Latin. I they're still like... bragging about when they used to do corporal punishment.
Wow.
Yeah,
it is
treatment.
That
kind.
That's
it is
great.
Like, yeah, like, you know, you can look back. I'm sure Exeter is the same where they have like, what am I trying to say? Like the person that won this award and it dates back to like 1906, then the person that won it in 1907. And
yeah,
then you
yeah,
can
I'll...
like see the year they started letting Jews in, you know, from the news, which is nice. Oh, so this one teacher turned to me, and at this dinner we're having at the school for the reunion, she's like, you had so many smart, lively kids in your grade. Why the fuck did they all become lawyers? And I was like, that's funny. You should get a mic. Say that out loud. People would enjoy it. But anyway, 63% of people said high school reunions are not good, which I mean, I'm kind of surprised. JD, what did you have you been to one? And did you see the love of your life? Was there any good sexual attention? Or B, did you make amends with someone that you stuffed in a locker? Anything exciting?
Stuffed it? No. My high school is very different from you guys. I went to a public school. Matt, there were girls there.
Well, that's how did you concentrate?
I couldn't, to be honest. And I think I went to my 15-year one, and it was great. And it was a very wide array of how people turned out. Like, there are doctors in my class. There are cops in my class. There are criminals in my class, you know? Like, just the like chefs. Like, a huge you know, where people ended up. And I am by far the least successful of everybody, but I kind of have a cool job. So people are like, oh, that's cool. You had a TV show on the, you know, in the United States. That's cool. But, you know, I like it. I like talking to my old friends from high school. So, well, yeah, I'm into it.
You're wrong.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's the thing. It's like, I don't want to look down on people who right. like high school reunion. Like, I'm not going to assume that you're all fucking gray ghosts who are just chasing babies and memories, right? Like it's like, oh, this is a nice night out. Like, it was fun.
Yeah.
And it was a good time. And, like, if that's the way you feel about it, I'm not going to, like, sneer.
Yeah.
I can only tell you, like, when I say they're bad, I'm really saying it from my own perspective. And it's not that they're bad. It's just I don't need them. They are superfluous.
Yeah. The worst part of it for me is just a reminder of how old I've gotten. Because seeing friends from high school and going, God damn, you really let yourself go. And
yeah, because it's
thinking
like,
the exact same thing about me.
Yeah, because it's like I'm looking at all these people. I'm like, well, I hope I don't look as old as they do. And I fucking totally do.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's not like mirrors don't exist, but yet we need to be reflected in the visage of our old friends to see our
1,000%. Of course. Yeah. You always look better in the mirror than you do in a photograph.
So true.
Always.
Interesting. I feel the reverse, but anyway, I have bad mirrors. I have standard apartment mirrors. All right, Drew, let's move on here. When people need help navigating life's biggest decisions, they seek our wise counsel, and we deliver an airtight verdict. It's time to settle this. So, Drew, I'm going to read you an email that one of our listeners wrote in for advice, and we'll help them solve it together.
Groovy.
For weather-related purposes, know that this story takes place in Boston. I had a coworker ask if we could switch shifts so they could avoid driving in a forecasted snowstorm since I lived much closer to our store. I agreed. They said they would, quote, owe me one. The next morning, I woke up at 6 a.m. ready to work, but before I left, I found out from upper management that the store would be closed due to the storm. A few weeks later, I asked the coworker to switch a shift with me, and they balked at the idea, arguing we'd never really switched those original shifts because neither of us had to work on the day of the storm, and that they didn't, in fact, owe me. My argument is A, we both agreed, B, I woke up early that morning on what would be my day off, and I was ready to work, and C, I could have, but didn't actually, have plans the previous evening or the day of that I might have theoretically had to cancel so I could take their shift. Please settle this. Am I crazy, or should this guy have switched shifts with me? Kinda love ya. That's Corey. Oh, thanks, Corey. We love you, too. I think this is a pretty open and shut case here, but Drew, I'm curious what you think of it.
I'm partial to Corey's side of things.
Yeah.
Because I don't think it's that much of a favor. Like, because switching shifts happens a lot in working America. Like, my daughter has to switch shifts at her job, like, a lot with people, and they just do, because it's like you're doing someone a solid. So, you know, I don't think, you know, it's funny. I just watched the last season of Curb Your Enthusiasm for work, and, like, you know, a lot of Curb, it's brilliant, of course, but it's also, it's centered on people making mountains out of molehills, right? And, you know, this would be a thing where you could argue with Larry David for 9 hours about this and be very funny and all that stuff. But really, it's like if everyone involved is a sensible party, they just say, all right, and they just, okay, I'll switch with you and whatever. And then it's like done. It's like my kids, like my, if my kids are like, you know, if I have my kid, if you know, I say to one of my kids, oh, you got to do the dishes. And you're like, ah, but I did it last night. I'm like, well, none of the other kids are fucking here. Like, you have to do it. Like, tough shit. And they're like, okay, all right. So it's like, so long as people, like, grudgingly accept slightly unfavorable terms, you know, it's just basic sort of courtesy. So I would side with Corey here.
Yeah, I think with the person that, we don't know the other person's name, Bob, whatever, what they're underestimating is that the worst part about working and switching shifts is the waking up early.
And, yeah.
You know, getting dressed in the dark winter of Boston. And, like, kind of your like, let's say Corey was, he didn't have plans. He said he could have had plans, but he didn't actually have plans. But let's say his plan was like, hey, I finally don't have to work today. I'm going to sleep in.
And I got a high school reunion to go to. I got
25 years already?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm just going to sleep in, get up, make breakfast in my pajamas and watch TV and not get out of them. That's a perfectly fine day off. But you ruined that day by making him get up at 6 and be in the mindset, some might say grind set, of going to work that day. So once he wakes up for that shift, it's over. He's...
Yeah, your morning's ruined.
His morning is ruined. Yeah. And so he has, in effect, switched the shift with you by being willing to work. And on the converse side, Bob, the guy he was going to switch with, whether or not the store opened, Bob got to have his day off. He got to sleep in. He wasn't, like, checking with upper management to see, like, oh, shit, did they actually open the Ben & Jerry's or not, you know?
It's just be a good sport, you know? It's not that hard, you know? If it were, like, if it were a much grander imposition, like, you know, if I had to book a flight ticket and you canceled on me, you know, or something like, I don't know. But, you know, something that had a lot higher stakes than... A work shift. Not, I know work shifts are important to people, but like it's just a work shift. Like, change your shift. Who gives a fuck?
Yeah, he already changed his schedule to accommodate this other person. This person should have switched with him. But this is very rare in Is This Good History, because we have a follow-up from Corey, because he sent me the email, and respectful podcast host, I thanked him for sending in the email. And then he wrote back, and he said, for what it's worth... Comedian, author, and judge John Hodgman was doing a radio appearance shortly after this event happened, and the radio station solicited potential cases for him to rule on. I submitted this, and the host read my account, and Judge Johnny Boy ruled against me, saying that since nobody had to work that day and it was a wash, that it was a wash, totally missing the nuance of my argument. Am I missing something? I've never understood my coworker or Hodgman's opinion. I think my coworker was just being a self-centered dick, and now I can only conclude that Hodgman may be one too.
Wow. Oh, that's disappointing. I like John.
I know. What's this guy going to come for Asif Manvi next, you know?
Maybe John Hodgman is a morning person like I am and doesn't think there's a huge sacrifice in waking up early. That could be. Or he's never worked a day in his life.
Yeah, that's right. He took that I'm a PC money and said, I'm never doing shift work again.
That's right.
But this guy, Corey, he's really forum shopping here. You know, like when they go try to take a case to the court that'll be most favorable to them. So he's like, Judge Hodgman let me down, but I'm sure Matt and JD will side with me.
Nothing wrong with a second opinion, I think.
Yeah, because now there's three of us.
Yeah.
Provided JD agrees, he may be like, well, actually, guys, fuck that. Like, you know, but now he's got three people against John Hodgman's one person.
Three notable voices.
He's got the majority ruling.
Yes.
So he's good to go.
Yes.
Yeah. Bob owes Corey. Case closed.
Yes. Okay. JD, it sounds like you agree.
Yes.
Okay. Perfect. All right, Drew. Not everyone's going to agree with everything you say, but sometimes you have to stand alone on the edge of popular consensus. It's time for unpopular opinions. So here's where I go on the internet to find people's unpopular opinions, and we decide whether they're good or not. And for this one, I wanted to have a theme because you write a lot about food, you love cooking, And perhaps most importantly, in 2015, you appeared on Chopped, and you don't have to say it, I'll say it for you, you won.
I did.
$10,000, I believe, and created one of the internet's favorite GIFs. You, what would you call that? Dancing with your thumbs?
The thumb dance.
The thumb dance. Was that like in the moment, or had you done that before?
No. So at the end, they were like, "Oh, do something celebratory." So the first thing I did was the jersey, like the name on the jersey, like held it up.
Yeah.
Classic, and they're like, no, like that.
And I was like, he said no.
I was like, what are you, racist or something like that? And then I did one other thing, and they were like, no, not quite. And then I was like, well, fuck, I don't know, just do this. And they're like, yeah, that's good.
That's the one.
And you gotta understand, it was like 10 o'clock at night or something like that. I just wanted to fucking go home. Like, that was the thing about Chop. They tell you right away, they say, you either want to lose in the first round or you want to win. Because... Mm-hmm. You don't want to be there because the day is from 6 a.m. to 10 p.m.
Oh,
you
my
go all the way through.
God.
And it's like, and the cooking part is by far the most fun, but the cooking part is, it's as much time as the show. Like, right. All of that is correct. Like, that's, they don't fudge that. So you're only cooking for a grand total of like an hour and a half, right?
Right.
The rest of the time, you're sitting or you're being interviewed, but you're being interviewed, you're being asked the same question 500 times. So they just have coverage and they have, you know, selection of, you know, whatever most sort of, I don't know, belligerent answer that they were able to coax out of you or whatever. So, you know, so by the end, you know, but I was happy I'd won, but I was really fucking tired. So, you know, I would, if they had told me to take my balls out and swing, I would have done that.
Now that's a gif.
Yeah.
Yeah. Could you just dab for 30 seconds straight? We feel like that's the best way to end the show.
Yeah.
I actually, now, this is not the point of this segment, but I'm curious now because, like, I don't watch Chopped anymore because I overdosed on it. Just watched it way too much in the early 2010s.
But you got the idea.
Yeah, the idea.
Got the gist.
Yeah. What always amazes me in that, or Top Chef, which I still do currently watch, is they'll be showing the chefs doing something, which we'll find out at the end of the show was their undoing. Like the thing that really fucked, like they didn't sear properly or whatever. They added some ingredient that really fucked
they
up.
They fucked up the rice.
The whole thing. The oh, rice. My God. Don't make risotto. We all know that. Yeah. But when they're recounting it in the Talking Head interview, they all do a good job to me of making it seem like they don't know that that was the thing that completely fucked them, you know, because they're doing the interview after, but they're not in the interview going like, and then I added the salt and I fucking didn't realize that it was actually sugar and I really shouldn't have done that. They'll just be like, so then I added some salt, you know, and they just move on. So how did you, Is it easier than I think it is to pretend that you don't already know what has happened when they're interviewing you after the fact, but you have to pretend that they're interviewing you sort of concurrently with what's happening?
I mean, they sort of coach you to do that. Like, their answers they want out of you.
Mm. Right.
You know, because, you know, they were like, well, what would a chopped win mean to you? And I was like, well, it'd be pretty cool. You know, it'd be awesome. But, like... And like, but they don't want that. They want it to be life and death. Like, you know, like, oh, I'll fucking die if I don't win. So like, I just say, there was a point like late in the night where I was like, just tell me what you want me to say and I'll say it. Like, I will. And they were like, okay, all right. Like, and you know, if there are things that like in the telecast, like the cooking itself isn't fudged, but of course with the interviews and the backstage interviews, well, they interview you for an hour and they're only going to use 40 seconds mm-hmm. of what they've gotten. And so like, for example, like in my entree round, I had to cook wild boar and I served Manit a schnitzel that had not been fully cooked through. Mm-hmm. So it was like pink in the middle. Okay. Right. And I was like, oh shit, I'm fucked. And I talked about it in the interview. None of that made the final episode.
Right.
None of it.
Right.
And I think someone and one of the other contestants got cut. That never made the final episode. I microplaned my finger. I didn't bleed, but it was like
they're like, could you bleed though? It'll be great for TV.
Yeah, because usually like that's the kind of
finger condoms on.
That's the kind of thing that gets the record scratch, like in the soundtrack, right? Mm-hmm. You know. So like you know, there is, you know, there's the magic of and the deception of editing involved in though in shaping the narratives of a course or, you know, or a person's sort of backstory and all that stuff. Like they took me to, like for my intro video, they took me to DC and did all this shit with me. They didn't use any of it because, you know, it's 42 minutes. So, you know, what they pick and choose are good. You know, they're going to use what, you know, what they can cut in the fastest and will, you know, have as much impact as they can get out of it. And, you know, it's not going to necessarily super adhere to reality, but that's just the nature of the beast.
But let's get to some unpopular opinions about cooking. First one here. Sure. Spaghetti ain't all that and shouldn't be more popular than every other type of pasta. So this person on the internet continues, at least in the U.S., it seems like spaghetti is much more popular than any type of pasta. Is there a reason for that? I mean, just about all dry pasta is equally quick and easy to cook and goes just as well with different sauces. Why is spaghetti the popular one? Why not, say, rigatoni? And I have a theory on this. I'll just float this to you, Drew, so see what you think. I think that at the time when spaghetti was brought to America, don't have a year on that for you, but I think it was a novelty. I think people literally, like non-Italian Americans, were eating it going, can you believe how long this thing is? Like, we gotta twirl it up. And I think it was like a fun little novelty that never quite went away. But I don't know. What do you think?
Right. No, I think that's correct. You know, it's funny is I went on, you gotta kill me, I went on a different podcast called The Sporkful. And the host of that one was like inventing a new pasta. Which turned out to be very, very good. But he, too, was like, spaghetti's bullshit because it's hard to eat and all that stuff. And, you know, it was my, you know, it was one of my favorite dinners when I was a kid was spaghetti and tomato sauce because it was easy. It was basic. And you made a mess, but, like, you were kind of allowed to, right? Your parents didn't really give a shit. Like, so long as you weren't, like, smearing it all over your clothes or whatever. It was going to make a mess. And it was like you could eat big forkfuls of it. So it had that, you know, it's like how eating ramen noodles is deeply satisfying because you can literally stuff your face with it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I like spaghetti in that regard. But I have a son who likes pasta but doesn't like spaghetti because he thinks it's too hard to eat. So I sort of get where people are coming from if they're not down with spaghetti. But I also do think that, like, the Epicurean culture out there is evolving past spaghetti anyway. Like, you go to, a Michelin star Italian restaurant, you're not ordering fucking spaghetti. It's not even on the menu.
No.
You know, like, you're probably gonna get, you know, some really fancy carbonara made of, I don't know,
a pappardelle,
sea urchin or some shit, you know, like, so.
But yeah, okay, but do you subscribe to the theory as a cook? Because I think, like, the orthodoxy is certain pastas are required for certain sauces because sometimes you want them to the, like, if it's a hollow noodle, you want the sauce to get in there. Or if it's a ridged noodle, it drags the sauce better.
Sure.
I think that's true, but I think people are putting a little too much. Like, for instance, between a ziti, a penne, and a rigatoni, like, if one of those noodles committed a crime and you had to describe it to a police sketch artist, it would all look, you know, like the same noodle. That's my point.
You know what's funny is my wife loves rigatoni and hates penne. And I...
Why?
To this day, no, I don't know. I don't know.
Can we get her on? Is she in shouting distance?
Wait.
I'm the exact opposite. I love penne. I hate rigatoni. Rigatoni's too thick and tubular. It's too much air in between.
But I think my wife is, like, against, like, the diagonal cut of penne or something. I'm not even going to ask her about it after this because it's just a waste of time.
Yeah, I guess it just depends if you like your pasta ridged, but I find people go a little too heavy into it. And it's also like a flat noodle seems to me would be easier to make. Like, obviously, if you're just buying it in a store, fine. But in terms of spaghetti's popularity, like, a fettuccine would be easier, wouldn't it? Because it's just flat and you don't have to make it circular.
Yeah.
I don't know. What the fuck do I know?
But the bottom line is...
Oh, I'm sorry, JD. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say spaghetti is for kids. And
right.
We all grew up eating spaghetti. It's fun to eat. In our house, me and my two boys would take our shirts off on spaghetti night.
That rocks!
And it was just a fun way to eat It's messy. Kids,
your bare torso is your bib.
Exactly. And kids mess up spaghetti in the cutest way. They say pischetti. Fettuccine, you can't get a kid to say fettuccine. So it's just better. Like, yeah, spaghetti is awesome.
So it's like one night you sit down, your son starts taking off his shirt, but there's orecchietti on the plate. He's like, well, this doesn't call for it. So, you know, ruined.
Exactly right.
All right, let's get to the next unpopular opinion. People need to stop overreacting when they find a hair in their food. This person continues, I found a hair in my food today. I picked it out, flicked it away, and kept eating. It still tasted great. If people find multiple hairs, then I can understand saying something, but just finding one singular hair should not ruin your whole meal.
I agree with that.
Yeah, I mean, this is unpopular because people do fucking freak out. I've never understood why people freak out more about hair. Well, I guess I know because they're seeing the hair, but you don't know what's going on back there. Like, we all have this idea of like, oh, they've got a dish full of these tiny metal spoons, and then they're tasting it, and then they're putting that one, they're discarding that one, and their saliva is not getting anywhere near this. And I don't believe that for a goddamn second. If they're making a meatball, they're pressing their bare hands with whatever shit's under their nails.
Yeah.
To craft it, like,
I mean, if you have latent, you know, if you have residual germophobia from the pandemic and stuff like that, I sort of get it. But like, it's a hair; it's inert. It doesn't even have cells, so it's like, you know, it can't. You know, if it were like a toenail, we'd have a problem.
Yeah.
Right. But a hair is just, you pull it out and it's the same fucking food.
Yeah.
And you're almost certainly not going to get lupus because you ate from something that a hair touched, when a hair is just a hair. It's, you know,
not a pleasant mouthfeel, though, we all have to admit. You get one and then it's...
Yeah. No, I don't want to eat it.
And, yeah.
Also, like, 90% of the time, the hair is mine. You know? Right. Like,
well,
like, I can identify it. Like, that ain't the lunch lady's hair. Like, I know that color. That's my own stupid hair getting in there.
But it's also, maybe it's, I have residual grossness from, if that would happen at, you know, when I was younger, that your schoolmates would always say it was pubic hair, you know?
So that
could be the thing. JD, I
but
feel
you
like,
know if it's a pubic hair. Like, it's wiry, you know?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, honestly, the thing that really gets me is I keep thinking it could be a hair growing out of a mole. I don't know why my brain goes there. And if that's the case, then the dish should be burned. JD, I feel like I know the answer. You would never return a plate of pasta if it had a hair in it, would you?
Absolutely not. I mean... Look at me. I've got a Duck Dynasty beard. There's no way I'm not getting blamed for it, regardless of the color. So, okay.
Well, that's but you made it, like, you surreptitiously made a good point where it's like, do I want to return this and have to wait 20 minutes for another dish? No, I'm fucking hungry. I want to keep eating. I don't want to interrupt. Like, my need to eat supersedes my germophobia by orders of magnitude. It's not even fucking close.
Right.
Yeah. But do you agree that if it's more than one hair, then it's gone too far?
Yeah, I think, because then it's like, it betrays a lack of care in how you were preparing my food. You know, one, I get it. We're all human. We all make mistakes. But, you know, if I get the sense that you sort of mopped the brisket with the top of your head, I might be like, that might crush my appetite a little bit.
Yeah. Okay. There's also the ensuing groveling that happens from the restaurant usually, which makes me uncomfortable as well.
Oh, you know, like, really? There's no more groveling in restaurants. That's over.
Okay.
I mean,
I guess my Applebee's is better than yours.
Well, it must be, because now they think that you're doing it like you brought the cockroach and you put it in the pasta to try to get a free meal.
Right.
Well, JD, what about that? Yeah, what about an ant or an insect in your food? Return or pull it out?
I mean, I think I'm just pulling it out, to be honest.
All right. Yeah. What a hero.
Well, that's like if I buy like organic produce and like sometimes like a little tiny ant fly on it. I just flick out. I don't give a fuck.
In a bag of salad, I don't even think you could return that. Maybe like what do you think? It grows in the ground. What do you think is happening?
Yeah, I wouldn't care that much about it. A cockroach, different story.
Cockroaches.
A full, you know, a male adult rat. I'm not.
Female rat, fine, but male adult, yeah.
All right, one more unpopular cooking opinion here. Anybody who won't share a recipe because it's a secret family recipe is a pretentious jerk. This person writes, someone just flat out refused to share a recipe with me because they claim it's a secret family tradition that nobody else can know about. Who the fuck cares? Food is made to be shared. Get over yourself, appreciate that someone likes it enough that they want to recreate it, or, believe it or not, make it even better. When people do eventually share these recipes, 9 times out of 10, it's super standard and only has like one minor change. Adding a secret pinch of sugar to your chili or doubling down the brown sugar in your cookies or reducing the water in your stock does not make it your family's recipe. Stop pretending your grandparents are fucking Gordon Ramsay. They haven't invented a new way to cook. Give me the goddamn recipe. I say preach to this one. I mean, well, first of all, Drew, do you have any secret family recipes?
I don't think I do. I mean, I have a family recipe for chili, but I publish it every year. So, and that was an episode of Curb that was in the final season where the
vinaigrette dressing, right?
Yeah. So, no, I don't think I've ever had anybody, like, if it's your business and you won't give it away because, like, it might harm your business. I sort of get that.
Yeah,
like,
yeah. The colonel's not telling you what spices
are. We can't tell you the 11 herbs and spices that go into KFC. Fine, whatever. You know, you've got your investment to protect or whatever. But if it's like, if I'm eating like some nice, I don't know, souffle at a friend's house and I'm like, oh, how'd you make this? And like, oh, I can't tell you. I would be like, what the fuck?
I would assume they can't tell me because they bought it. Is honestly what my first assumption would be.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, this is a good question. Do you think anyone around our age, you know, like say between, you know, 40 and 2 and 50, has a secret family recipe?
No.
I don't think so. I think that died with tuberculosis.
I think it died with the internet because, you know, most of the time when people cook something, they want to be lauded for what they cooked, right? Mm-hmm. And what better way to do that than if they are not physically in your presence, you post the recipe and they say, I made your recipe and it was great. Then it's like, it's sort of an indirect way of cooking for them, right? You know, and most people are like me. They want validation every waking second. Mm-hmm. And so that's an easy way to get it. And I think they know that if they were going to be like, oh, I'm not going to share the recipe with you, I think they would kind of know that everyone else would give them the side eye for that. So
right. Or I do find a lot of the time, maybe not a secret family recipe, but when you ask someone, like, how did you make this, and they're sort of reticent to tell you, it's because they put so much fucking butter in it, and that's why it tastes good, and they're like, you know, they don't want to tell you. Like, speaking
it's
of
funny,
Chuck,
we got
Scott
all these
Conan's,
unpopular opinions, and they're actually probably all right. Like, they're probably popular opinions.
Right. Yeah. Well, here's one of mine. We don't have to talk about it, but I just got to get it off my chest from watching too many food videos scroll by me on Instagram Reels. I don't know when this started, but scraping the top of the food you just cooked with a knife. Do you know what I'm talking about? Like, people are now constantly showing how, like, crispy the texture is by rubbing the blade of the knife over the
food. Oh, really?
Food. Yeah, it drives me up the wall.
That's real salt-based shit.
Yeah, I don't know if it's like an ASMR thing or it's just a, like, look how I rendered.
So
the
you're not talking about like icing a cake where you're smoothing it out.
No, like something hard and crispy. So you hear that,
like, a steak
sound.
It's usually a steak or a piece of meat or something like that. But
yeah, but like a piece of meat is self-evidently tasty looking, you know, if you cooked it right.
That's what I'm saying.
You gotta hear it.
So someone saw someone doing it.
Exactly.
And they're like, oh, that looks cool, so I'll do it too with mine. And then it just went from
there. And now it's like, you have to do it or we don't know. We don't know if you got a hard enough sear on that thing. All right, Drew, there's only one very quick thing left to do, and that's play subjective trivia. So subjective trivia, it's just like regular trivia, except only I know the answer.
Oh.
And I have my answer written right here, so you know I'm not cheating. The goal is for your answer to be my answer. And since we were talking about Chopped, that inspired today's question. And the question is, which Chopped judge would I most want to have dinner with? Now, they're not cooking for me. We're just going to a restaurant, not theirs. We're just having dinner together. We're just hanging out. Your options are Jeffrey Zakarian, Amanda Freytag, Marcus Samuelson, or Chris Santos. Now, okay. Normally I say you can ask JD. He doesn't know my answer, but I don't know if he's a chopped guy. I don't know if he's going to be any help here. So this is
I've never heard those names before, ever. So
this is all on your shoulders, Drew. Which chopped judge would I most want to have dinner with? Jeffrey Zakarian, Amanda Freytag, Marcus Samuelson, or Chris Santos? What do you think?
I'm gonna say it's a layup and say it's Freytag.
Okay, interesting. Why do you say that?
Because she's attractive.
Okay. She's a cutie.
And she's charming. So
she's very charming.
She's one of the nicer judges. Like, she's not a cock. So, you know, like Zakarian, I actually like all the chop judges, but he's going to be his job is to be a little bit precious and to be tough on the contestants. You're like, oh, you might be a dick. You know, so it's like I would rule him out. Samuelson, I actually talked to on the phone. He was very nice. Anyway, I'm sticking with Freytag.
Okay. So I had it down to two. One of them was Freytag, but my only hesitation was I'm gonna want to get the juice, you know, the gossip from set. And ooh, she might be too nice to give it to me. So therefore,
yeah, no way she would give it to me.
But I don't really think any of these other people are that cool. Aside from Marcus Samuelson, who I did see once at a restaurant hiding beneath an enormous wide-brimmed hat. Chris Santos. Chris Santos probably the chop judge most likely to talk to you about crypto. I don't think
he was one of my judges, though, and he could not have been nicer.
Oh, actually, is he really nice? Damn it.
They all couldn't have been nicer.
Oh, well, that's unfortunate.
But he was very personable and just like, you know, like you ever have that rapport where it's like with people where it's like you always kind of knew each other, you mm-hmm. know, like a good job interview sort of mm-hmm. rapport, you know, like it was like that.
But in the end, you are 100% correct because the answer is Amanda.
Oh.
You beautiful bastard, you did it. Your reward is you could tell people where to find you. I mean, we let people do that anyways, but it's more fun when you earn it.
All right. Listen to The Distraction with me and David Roth every week and subscribe to Defector.com and read me over at sfgate.com.
And buy all your books.
Buy my books.
Buy all your books.
I got books.
Hey, I don't want to brag, but I read The Postmortal.
Oh, that's the one that has sold the most copies.
But it's your first one too, right? Isn't it?
Yeah. So my first novel. I haven't beaten it.
Yeah, but it's just longevity. It's just time, right? Eventually.
Yeah. It is. It was cool, though, for a while because a couple years after it came out, it started to get run as a common year read.
Oh, really?
For college students, their freshman year. And so colleges would invite me to their campus and pay me to talk to the freshmen, like to give a speech to the freshmen. And that was like, that was so ego boosting. It was just the coolest thing ever. And you got paid for it. That was pretty awesome. So I enjoyed that.
So you're...
And then it stopped happening. I was like, wait.
What? They didn't...
I'm not going to get invited to a college campus every year for the rest of my life for 10 grand? Shit.
I thought once you're in the canon, you stay in the canon.
That's what I thought, but no.
God damn it. Okay, well, one of these other books will get in the canon. We'll start a petition. Get Drew in the canon. Whatever that means and however that's done, we'll do it as a thank you to you. Remember to check us out at patreon.com/isthisgood and send me emails at isthisgoodpod@gmail.com. Thank you for listening. Thanks so much to Drew for coming on. Thanks in advance for leaving a 5-star review for everyone. I'm Matt Austin, and this was Good. We'll see you next week.